Mr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. Now, this hour, we're going to talk to you about cancer. And I think this is a very, very important subject because most of you know somebody who's had cancer, has died of cancer, has cancer, is ill from cancer. But, you know, in years past, cancer was a relatively rare occurrence. They say at the turn of the century, a relatively small number of people had cancer. And yet today, it's 1 in 2, 1 in 3 are going to die of cancer. And why are we seeing such a dramatic increase in a modern-day society? Let me just preface what I'm going to tell you today with an occurrence that happened sometime, I suppose, in the late 1970s or very early 1980s. And at that time, I was very interested in some people who were saying that Laetrile, which is a substance that you get out of apricot pits or peach pits, or it's a sort of a bitter seed inside the peach or apricot pit, it will block cancer. And of course, anybody who was advocating any of that sort was looked upon as sort of a quack, and we heard stories about some doctors who were using that and making a lot of money and exploiting their patients. And there was a very, very famous doctor back at University of Chicago, Dr. Ivey, who'd been very well thought of, and suddenly he was out there talking about how Laetrile was a good medication, and he was belittled and attacked and vilified by literally the entire medical establishment. And I can remember one of my mentors in medicine, Dr. Carrie Alsberg here in Santa Cruz, saying, you know, Dr. Ivey used to be such an ethical individual, but it must have been the money that got him pushing that Laetrile that never did anybody any good, because everybody who takes it dies. Well, of course, the reason that they died was because they had an incurable disease. They had terminal cancer. That's really the only reason most people were taking Laetrile. And then one time I read an article about some fellow named Dr. Dean Burke, who was with something called NCI. I didn't know what NCI was, and so I asked one of my pathologist friends, and he said, why, that's the National Institute of Cancer, or National Cancer Institute. So I tracked him down, and I called him back at the National Cancer Institute, and he called me back, and he told me who he was. He was the head of cancer research, cancer treatment research, at the National Cancer Institute, which is the primary organization commissioned by Congress and our government to study cancer. And so I asked him about some of the things he had written, been attributed to him about Laetrile, and he said, Laetrile is the most efficient medication we have for fighting cancer today. He said, I've been at this for 25 years. I have been, my whole life has been involved in trying to find treatments for cancer. He said, in the terminal stages, number one, it's not going to cure everybody. It's not going to cure most people because they're just too far gone by the time they get the Laetrile, but it makes them all feel better, and it makes them feel a lot better than the chemotherapy and the radiation, the other things that really aren't, in many instances, going to prolong their lives. But he said, I have whole filing cabinets full of material and documentation that Laetrile, when given early, is as good and far more efficient than chemotherapy and most other things we have. Well, I said, but Dr. Burke, I read about these studies that were done back at the Smithsonian Institute, and they said Laetrile didn't work. And he said, well, that was because they designed those studies not to work. The original studies did work, and then because they didn't want to come up with a cancer treatment, they redid them again, and they designed them so that they would show that Laetrile had no effect. And I said, why would anybody do a thing like that? And he didn't answer me. And for many years after that, I just had a very uneasy feeling that the story didn't make sense after all. Why would anybody want to block an effective cancer treatment? Everybody, every doctor, every human being with any human compassion would want to relieve suffering. And that was one reason I went into medicine and practiced it for 35 years. And I know the doctors in my community and the cancer specialists, and they're compassionate individuals. I've seen them suffering right along with their patients and who they developed a personal relationship to, and how they were able to deal with death that they had to face day in and day out, week in, week out, year in, year out. I just don't know, because I personally couldn't do it. When I ran into somebody who had a terminal cancer, I became so emotionally involved that, and I would just send them to an oncologist. And this whole idea that there could be some macabre force out there blocking an effective cancer treatment, when this is totally illogical. And it's only as I've really begun studying through the years more and more that I become increasingly aware that there are diabolical forces out there. As I study population control and I read the writings of Bertrand Russell, who talks about how if we could only have a black death sweeping the world every generation, then we wouldn't have to worry about population. Or Jacques Cousteau, who talks about having to kill off 365,000 people a day if we're going to get the population down into balance with nature, or the writings of Ted Turner, who talks about getting the world population down to 250 million, or the gentleman David Foreman, who came from Earth First and now sits on the board of the Sierra Club, wants to get the world population down to 100 million. In other words, they're talking about killing off 95-97% of the world's population. When you read the writings of people like Sam Keen, Dr. Sam Keen was at the Gorbachev summit, and he was talking about if simply 90% of the world's population was done away with, there wouldn't be enough people around to do any harm. I traveled to Elberton, Georgia. I saw the great stone monument there where they were advocating getting the world's population down to 500 million in constant balance with nature. And eventually it becomes obvious that there really are people out there who think that there are too many people in the world and will go to any lengths to limit the population of the world. As horrible as it may seem, there really are people out there who have a genocidal mentality. And so this then led me into a number of various types of study. And, of course, one of the most fascinating types was some of the interviews we've done, one of them with a Dr. Dinigan. Dr. Dinigan is a pediatrician who practices in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And in 1969, as a young doctor just out of medical school, he had an opportunity to go to a medical meeting, and the speaker there was one of his professors from medical school, a neonatologist, not a doctor who deals with newborn children. And the doctor at that time said, "I'm going to tell you what the future holds. I want you to turn off your recorders. I don't want you to take any notes. And if you quote anything I say in the future, I'll deny I said it. But if people were just asking questions, this whole plan that is being laid out now would not unfold." And then he proceeded to tell what the future held. Now, certainly this man was part of this inner clique, this inner cabal of people. He eventually would become the head of Planned Parenthood here in the United States. But he talked about how there were just too many people in the world, and they were going to have to create new illnesses to begin killing the people off, because if we didn't kill the people off, the population would explode. And then he began talking about Africa, and of course, he was very anti-black, he was very racist, very superior. The Anglo-Saxon were superior, and we really had to do away with the blacks in Africa. And then he talked about cancer, and he said, people are going to have to die of something. Why shouldn't they die of cancer? And he said, there are treatments, and we are going to keep those treatments locked up in the files. And he mentioned the Rockefeller Foundation. Now, we actually have that interview that I did with Dr. Dinigan. It's in our four-tape set called Genocide, and you really need to hear that. But it begins to begin to give you some sort of a picture of what we're really talking about. Now, those of you who've been listening to Radio Liberty regularly will recall that we've done some interviews on aspartame, NutraSweet. And aspartame is known in animals to produce brain cancers and many other types of cancers. It's a very toxic substance. It's an exotoxin. It attacks the brain. It will produce symptoms similar to Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease and long tract disease. And if you haven't heard our interviews with Dr. Schwartz or with Dr. Blaylock, they are, of course, included in our four-tape set on aspartame, NutraSweet. And of course, we carry the book, Exotoxins, the Taste That Kills. But aspartame is a known carcinogen, and it's being distributed in soft drinks all throughout America. In fact, Sunday at church, one of my associates came up and showed me that they're at the church. They're distributing NutraSweet in powdered form for a sweetener for the coffee. And as he said, here we are, here, even in our church. And, of course, they're putting out the taste that kills. And as incredible as it seems, if you doubt what I'm saying, you need to get the interviews with Dr. Blaylock, who's a very eminent and well-qualified neurosurgeon, Dr. Schwartz, who's a family physician and has done a lot of emergency. In fact, he's internationally known for his work in emergency rooms. And then, of course, you need to get the four-tape set, and we will make available to you the government report, which tells you exactly what I've said. But, of course, the rest of the government has tried to cover up the report that the government bought and paid for by an independent organization that did the testing and determined, of course, it's a carcinogen. Of course, it produces a nervous system degeneration. And you say, how could anybody be evil enough that they'd allow that? There's a great deal of evidence to show that fluorides are carcinogenic. They certainly are in animals, multiple types of cancer. And, of course, we know, and we can give you the scientific studies that will document, there's a definite relationship between fertility rates and the levels of fluoride in the drinking water. The more fluoride you drink, in the drinking water, the lower the fertility rates. And one reason it's being pushed so hard is as a contraceptive in the water, just to cut down the population. Of course, we have a number of scientific studies that show it leads to hip fractures in the elderly because it makes the bones brittle, and you compare the areas with fluorides in the water and non-fluoridated water areas, and the significant increase in hip fractures. But then so many people die after hip fractures. But you see, if you have a genocidal mentality, you really don't care about that. But the carcinogenic properties of fluoride have been demonstrated in animals, so why aren't they concerned about it in human beings? Did you, for instance, realize that today America, the American government, despite the fact we're talking about cutting back on price supports for many different farm commodities, we're still providing farm supports for growing of tobacco. Now, tobacco, I don't care how you feel about the government coming in and telling people they shouldn't do dumb things, but we know that tobacco and nicotine and smoking increases not only cancer of the lung, but cancer of the pancreas, cancer of the bladder, and there may be other cancers, but those three cancers are definitely associated with tobacco. And you say, well, if people know they're doing something dangerous, they ought to be allowed to do it in a free society. And I'm not going to argue that point with you, but what I'm saying is, why are we subsidizing the growing of tobacco on one hand, and on the other hand, we're telling people how terrible it is? Isn't there something a little incongruous with this? And those of you who are regular listeners to Radio Liberty will remember our discussions on MTBE. That's the methyl tertiary butyl ether that's being put into our gasoline, getting into our water supply in many areas, and it's a carcinogen. And we have our interviews with Dr. Melman, one of the world's leading toxicologists, who goes into the background of how much of a carcinogen MTBE is. And then, of course, there are many, many other things out there. Many times our food in areas is depleted of certain minerals, and we know that selenium, among other things, is related to cancer of the pancreas, cancer of the prostate, and several other types of cancers. And simply a selenium food supplement will help to counter that and will cut back on the incidence of cancer. So why aren't doctors being taught these sort of things in medical school? Well, if doctors understood so much of what I'm telling you, they would be advising their patients not to be drinking fluoridated water. We certainly wouldn't be giving fluoridated water to our children. We may very well have strongest teeth in the graveyard for some of our children who may very well develop osteogenic sarcoma or maybe other tumors associated with the intake of fluorides, which is a violent toxin. And so why are we giving it? Well, because the doctors, the dentists aren't being told this, because there's an organized effort to suppress much of what we're telling you here. And, of course, if you'd like to get our four-tape set on the fluorides, this will be available within a few weeks. And so we begin to see this trend over and over again, efforts on the part of organized medicine and the part of the National Cancer Institute to suppress information about the relationship between first trimester abortions and breast carcinoma. Now, Dr. Joel Brind has done an extensive analysis of the world's literature, and he published an article last year that pointed out that in, I believe it was 18 of the 21 or 23 world studies going into the background between first trimester abortion and breast carcinoma, in 18 of the 21 or 23, there was a very definite and significant causal relationship. with one first trimester abortion. Now, other studies show by the time you have two or three first trimester abortions and never carry a pregnancy to term, your incidence of breast carcinoma doubles or triples. So why aren't we telling young women that when they go in for an abortion? I know very well when I was in the member of the House of Delegates of the California Medical Association, and I tried to bring this up at one of our meetings and said, well, wouldn't it be proper for girls going in to have an abortion to have informed consent and be told that there is the possibility, not that it's definitely ascertained scientifically, but there is the possibility that there's a relationship between first trimester abortions and breast carcinoma? Wouldn't that be the logical thing to do, to let them know that there's a possibility that they may die of breast cancer down the road or have to have their breast amputated and have their bodies disfigured because they're going to have this abortion? And believe me, the opposition was there. There was no way that they were going to allow this to come about. And of course, after Dr. Brin came out with his article that appeared in I believe a British medical journal, because he couldn't get it published in an American medical journal, because they would not publish that here because of the degree of control that exists over so many of our medical journals in the peer review process. And then immediately the AMA got an article rushed through the New England Journal of Medicine that really was not scientific at all. It was a Danish study. Anything to prevent having to tell women that they were risking breast carcinoma. In fact, it was the American Medical Association and the National Cancer Institute that attacked Dr. Brand, attacked his work, and then they came up with this phony article that appeared in January of this year in the New England Journal of Medicine, mixing apples and oranges and trying to come up with a description of turnips. It was a ridiculous article. I don't know whether they ever, New England Journal of Medicine, was even honest enough to publish Dr. Brin's critique of that. I haven't had a chance to talk to him since that time. But they're just, for instance, one in three lesbians will get breast carcinoma. Did you know that figure? And we'll, if you're out there in the listening audience, you want me to send the documentation on that, we do have that. But every effort has been made to prevent young women entering the lesbian lifestyle from learning that fact. Why? Because they're not trying to stop lesbianism. They're encouraging lesbianism because it's part of the population-controlled agenda. After all, most lesbians don't reproduce. Many of them will die at a fairly young age, and although not as young as the homosexuals, they're actively encouraging homosexuality because it's wonderful for population control. They die young, and they certainly ordinarily don't reproduce. Terrible, terrible, terrible tragedies and terrible, terrible evil out there. Well, you know, that's just part of the story, because there actually are treatments that have been around for a long time for cancer that have been actively suppressed. Now, I don't know how many of you heard my interview with Ed Griffin on his book, A World Without Cancer, but we will be carrying that here at Radio Liberty, and it'll be available through our ministry, as it will be the book, Exotoxins, The Taste That Kills. But if you read that book by Ed Griffin, or if you hear our four-tape set, and two of the tapes in our four-tape set on cancer are going to be covering my interview with Ed Griffin. And Ed Griffin, of course, tells the story of the background to how Laetril was found. It was really found to be the active ingredient, or at least the cyanide, hydrocyanide that within the apricot and peach pits was found to be beneficial, because there are groups of people in somewhere in the Himalayas, sort of an area of Shangri-La, and they lived to be 130, 140 years of age, and of course the major staple was the apricot pit. And so people began analyzing that. These people just didn't get cancers, and they lived very, very well. And so there were people who began analyzing that, and they eventually found that the cyanide that was available in the peach pits was released in the body just in the area where the cancers were, and it would tend to kill off cancer cells. And the one thing you didn't want to do in treating cancer was to do anything to disturb the immune response, because most people are having cancers in their body all the time, developing cancer cells, but the body will take care of them as long as the immunity is sufficient. Of course, if it begins to overwhelm the immunity, it's a very fast-growing cancer, then, of course, you want to approach it, you want to make a diagnosis. But, of course, many times when you take chemotherapy, you'll knock down the immune response. Now, the types of cancers with chemotherapy is truly life-saving, but there are many types of cancer where chemotherapy is not life-saving, and it simply prolongs life, or sometimes it makes people so deathly ill and their hair all falls out, and horrible, horrible things happen, and they're going to die anyway. And I'm sure the oncologists who are giving the medication are doing this in all sincerity. But if you look at the studies from where the Laetril is used in late-term cancer, maybe a 15% survival. But the important thing is these people all feel better. But then if you have an incurable cancer, how many people with an incurable cancer are going to survive with radiation and chemotherapy? If you have an incurable cancer, by definition, you're probably going to die in all probability. If you get to people early on with the Laetril, they many times will go, they felt that they had about an 85% cancer rate, but you had to get the people very, very early. We're not allowed to do that. Why? Because the government says this is cancer quackery. You've got to get your cancer treated the way the government says, with chemotherapy, with radiation, because that is the way that the medical establishment, I'm not talking about the average doctor. The average doctor really is compassionate, but there are evil and wicked people out there. And as Dr. Day said, people have to die of something. Why shouldn't they die of cancer? And you say, that's a horrible way to die. Many people die in intractable pain. But you see, there are evil and Luciferian and evil, wicked forces out there that are unconcerned about human compassion. In fact, this then justifies Dr. Kevorkian stepping in and saying, let's just go ahead and begin snuffing out lives on terminally ill cancer patients and anybody who's a little depressed. Maybe they have a neurological disease. Maybe they're just depressed. Let's just out them. And, of course, Dr. Kevorkian, in my estimation, is a very evil and wicked man. And according to Constance Cumby, who's our good friend, he is certainly a follower of Alice Bailey. He reads Alice Bailey's books and annotates her books. And, of course, Alice Bailey was a Luciferian. Does that mean Dr. Kevorkian is a Luciferian? Well, you just decide, looking at his art and seeing what he does and asking what his real agenda is, what his personal relationship is with the Prince of Darkness. That's your decision and, of course, not mine. But the fact that everything was done to prevent Laetril from being accepted in America is one of the most amazing, amazing stories, and it's all outlined about what happened when the studies were done at Sloan Kettering, and the studies were originally done by a very competent scientist on animals, and miraculous results. Laetril really stopped the cancers. So they couldn't have that because they didn't want a cancer treatment, and they kept insisting on repeating the studies, and again, they stopped the cancer growth in experimental animals. And so then, of course, they had to come back and redesign the test so that they knew it wouldn't work, and that's exactly what Dr. Dean Burke told me that they'd done. But it's all outlined there in great detail, and study after study after study after study was done that showed Laetril worked, and then they had to come up with a study to show it didn't work. And then, of course, the FDA and their wisdom was out raiding health food stores that were selling apricot pits. And any doctor who even talked about the fact that Laetril might be beneficial was immediately attacked and vilified. And many times, if you use Laetril, they'd go after your medical license. And there were some doctors who did it, and many of them were either driven from this country. And what was their crime? Why, they wanted to save human lives. Incredible, incredible story. Then there's the story of Easiac. Now, Easiac was a tea. It was an old Indian herbal remedy, and it was distributed in Canada. And, of course, there's a wonderful book written by Dr. Gary Glum, and we don't carry that book because it's really just too expensive. But it has a fascinating, fascinating story. And someday, some evening, we'll give you the whole story behind Easiac. But it was distributed by a nurse who happened to live in a place called Bracebridge, which is where my wife was born and raised. It's about 125 miles north of Toronto in Canada. And this nurse's crime was she gave it away. She gave away Easiac to people with cancer. Now, if it had chemotherapy, she wouldn't give it to them because she said chemotherapy would destroy the immune system, and this wouldn't work. She'd give it to people that had radiation, but not chemotherapy, because she says it's just useless. But the many, many stories and amazing, amazing stories of people who had dramatic cures from Easiac. And so the medical establishment moved in, and many of the doctors who had incurable people, that patients had gone through all the regular treatment, nothing could help them, were given Easiac, and they recovered. And those doctors who were sending patients were threatened with a loss of their license. There was a doctor, and the exact name of the doctor escapes me. I want to say, it starts with a B, Briss, something of that sort. But he had a large clinic, and I recall in New England, he was actually President Kennedy's personal doctor. And he had a clinic and a number of doctors in that clinic, and they did experiments with it, and they found that it worked. And then they went to the Smithsonian Institute, and they did the studies, and of course they designed the studies at the Smithsonian. Specifically, they would not prepare the product right so that they could prove that it didn't work. And then, of course, the doctor who had the clinic was pulled aside and said, if you want to have your clinic remain open, you will not continue using this, and you will not publicly say that this does work. Now, what's wrong with a product like this that can be given away very, very cheaply, is very effective, it doesn't produce nausea, you don't lose your hair, and the only thing it does, it tastes like tree bark. And that's because part of it comes from tree bark, as I remember. It's four herbs that are put together. Three of them raise the immunity, and one is carcinogenic. And there were many, many people in generations past who were cured with Easiac. And these were people who had had inoperable cancers, had been sent home to die by their doctors. But what was so unconscionable was the medical industrial complex. And really, this ties into the drug industry that makes fantastic profits out of the dispensing of these very toxic chemicals, did everything they could to prevent a product that, at least to some people, was making them feel ever so much better, maybe even just giving them hope, given away free. They weren't making a profit on it. But the drug companies aren't giving anything away free, and they did everything they could to shut down people who were dispensing Easiac, or even to prevent any discussion of the fact that this might be beneficial. And then, of course, there's the story of the Hoxie remedy. And Hoxie, as I remember, he was a farmer. And he had a horse that had a cancer and a big old tumor. Obviously, he was going to die, so they turned him out to pasture. They didn't want to kill him off. He was sort of a friend of the family. And the horse went around eating certain herbs. And lo and behold, the horse got better. So Hoxie, being a shrewd old farmer, went ahead and found out what those herbs were and mixed up a brew and gave it to other animals and then to human beings. And it was a very effective treatment for cancer. Well, then he, as he died, he gave it to his son. His son set up a series of cancer clinics throughout the southern part of the United States. People came from all over with incurable cancers, and many of them had dramatic relief. In fact, to the point where Morris Fishbein, who was the head of the American Medical Association, came down on his own and wanted to buy up the formula and so he could make a lot of profit. Well, the son said, well, I'll sell you the formula. After all, I've made a lot of money. I don't need to make money from this. But you got to promise you'll give it to people who can't afford it, because when my dad gave me the formula, he promised that I would give it away for nothing for people who couldn't afford it. And there was no way that the representative, Morris Fishbein, who was the executive director of the American Medical Association, was going to do that. And there is a video film available on this, which we can tell you how to get, or perhaps we'll be carrying it here on Radio Liberty, that actually is all the film footage. Remember, those of you who are old enough, remember the news you used to see on film at the movie theater on Saturday? Well, there were a lot of this film footage that was shot at that time about this very famous trial, because the American Medical Association then wanted to shut down Hoxie because he was a quack. And yet, and mainly because Morris Fishbein, who was the head of the AMA, couldn't buy this up. And, of course, Hoxie then turned around and sued the AMA, and he won his case. But then, of course, licensing organizations across America have done everything they could to prevent the Hoxie remedy from being used, and it is today used only in clinics in Mexico. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment for the second half of our program, and I'm going to encourage that you call in if you're out there at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And you may say, this is just so evil, I can't believe that this could be going on. But ladies and gentlemen, that's what this is all about, is a fight between good and evil. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time of our program. We've got to tell you that we're listener supported, and we have a unique opportunity, as you know, to get on to a shortwave, and we need your help if we're going to be able to do this. We're actually funded. We don't have any big organization behind us. We just have our loyal listeners out there who believe what we're doing and on a regular basis, month after month, contribute to us. And I know many of you people out there are giving sacrificially, and to those of you who are, you have my unending thanks, because I couldn't do possibly what I do without your help. But if you're not a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, you really need to join with us, because we're going to have an opportunity to reach people all across America, all around the world. We'll not only be on shortwave, we'll be on the web, we'll be on satellite, and we'll satellite G4 transponder 15 sideband 7.55, and you can pick us up on the net for the afternoon program. Of course, why would you do that? Because you can probably pick us up right now on KKMC, but other people in other areas are going to be able to do that. And but of course, we'd like your regular support, so we don't have to worry about the money coming in. And my wife have to really be concerned about how we're going to be able to pay the bills at the end of every month. And if you join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and for a gift of $20 or more a month, we'll send you the four best tapes of the month or a book. Well, if you believe in what we're doing, if you believe that programs such as this and the others that you hear on Radio Liberty are important, why don't you join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and be part of the solution, not part of the problem? Now, you join by simply calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and you can put a pledge on your Visa or MasterCard, or certainly you can write to us at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. That's Post Office Box 95063. And we, of course, will love to hear from you. We'd love to know that you're behind us. But I think that you will find a certain amount of satisfaction in being part of our family. We've got a great group of people out there. We're going to have a rally. We hope it's going to be the 24th of October. We were to get the papers. I still haven't seen them come in from the Holiday Inn, so I'm going to have to check with them and find out what happened. But we were hoping that we'd have the 24th of October down at the Holiday Inn. You can meet other people who feel the same way that you do, and then, of course, we'll put on a talk at that time. And if you really want to substitute one of our programs for your four tapes, you always can do that. You can ask for a specific tape, and we'll be glad to do it. Remember the number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And of course, one of the things I want to just briefly go into, we've got a couple of people on the line. We'll take Tom on line one and Tom on line two here in just a moment. But let me just point out that we know that the government, there are people in government who don't want a treatment. How do we know that? Well, Dr. Brzezinski has an excellent treatment for cancer. He's been working with the FDA. He's got a, 10, 15-year track record of treating inoperable brain carcinomas. And so what's the government doing? Why, one branch of the government is working with him, and one branch of the government is doing everything they can to destroy him. He's been indicted. They went to grand juries on three separate occasions before they could get a grand jury that would indict him, and then they hauled him into court, and it cost him, you know, tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of dollars to defend himself against a phony government charge. Why would they do that? Well, if you understand the genocidal mentality, it already makes sense, doesn't it? There really are people there who want to cut down the population of the world. And if you don't have our four-tape population control set, if you don't have our population control monograph, these things are widely circulated, if you don't have our four-tape set on genocide or the four-tape set on the Tuskegee study, and as I say, we're going to be coming up with a four-tape set on fluoride and on aspartame, that's NutraSweet, you really need to get these tape sets and help us to get the information out. Just ask yourself, why do you think we're really subsidizing tobacco farmers who are growing something that produces cancer today? And why aren't we telling young women going to the lesbian lifestyle that one in three lesbians gets breast carcinoma? Let's go to Tom. Hi, Tom.
I really appreciate what you're saying tonight.
Well, thank you so much.
It's all true.
Well, thanks. Well, you know that it's true. And for our listeners, Tom is a chiropractor in town, and he's an ethical practitioner. He's out there trying to do the best that he can, and he understands how toxic aspartame is. The average doctor doesn't, and this is not to depreciate the doctors. It's simply that information such as this is kept away from the doctors. It's kept out of medical journals, because if doctors were warning their patients, why, people would quit drinking all these soft drinks that are so toxic and are basically have chemicals in them that are detrimental to the neurological system and are carcinogenic. Go ahead, Tom.
The Hoxie video is available at the video store next to Saturn Cafe for people who are interested.
All right, fine. We're going to offer that, but if you want to just rent it there, what does it cost to rent? Or do they sell it?
I think it's rental. I don't know.
Fine. Well, if you want to rent it, fine. If you want to buy it, why, of course, we'll make it available through Radio Liberty. And have you seen that video?
Yes, I have.
Isn't that amazing? You know, here you have all these news clips of the battle, and, of course, Hoxie beat the American Medical Association, who were trying to prove he was a quack.
Yes.
And then, of course, the medical societies all across America made it so difficult that no doctor who wanted to continue practicing medicine would dare to do what was necessary to save his patients.
What was surprising about that video is how big he got. He took over most of Texas. He was starting to expand out into a lot of the surrounding states, and people were coming to him by the thousands. And it was real interesting how big he got before he was finally crushed by the AMA, I guess.
Right. Of course, Morris Fishbein wanted to buy it for himself because he wanted to make the profit on it. But, of course, he wasn't about to give it away for nothing.
Fishbein's also the fellow that ended the Royal Rife and his microscope and his cancer technique, too.
Why don't you tell our listeners about that? That's another story, and I'm not as well acquainted on that as you are. You want to tell our listeners? Now, this was a very sophisticated type of a microscope, and what's the story there?
Well, apparently, Royal Rife, quite a technical research type of mind he had. But back in the 30s, he invented a microscope that's actually superior to the microscopes of today, and it's I've seen a film on the way that microscope worked. But basically, you take a prism and you break down the we have regular light, and it breaks down into seven colors, and you take one of those spectrums, because that's 1/7 of the normal band of light, you can able to actually focus that into a smaller space and see smaller things. And using techniques like that, he was able to actually be able to see viruses and bacteria. And because he was able to do that, he could also discover what killed them. And what he experimented with different things, different chemicals, and finally found out that a very low, like a radio frequency, like an almost like an ultrasound. Very low wattage would actually destroy. You hit a certain frequency and a certain virus or bacteria would die, just much like when an opera singer hits a certain frequency and can shatter a glass. Well, that's what happened to the bacteria and virus. They would shatter. And he took to prove it to the San Diego Medical Association. He had 12 terminal cancer patients, put them on the program, and every single one of them got cured. And Morris moved in, you know, wanted to take the...
This is Morris Fishbein, of the executive director of the AMA, right.
And he wanted to move in on that one and take it over, but he was, Royal Rife was concerned about the same thing, that he wanted it available to the public at large and so forth, and... Anyway, that wasn't to be, and they crushed him and destroyed all his equipment and a lot of his papers and burned it up, everything up, just like they've done so many times. What I was calling up, though, about was I was over at a friend's house the other day, and he showed me a suppressed 1976 report by the National Cancer Institute. And in that document, they basically say three things, that they realize after the research and everything that cancer is due primarily to environmental, nutritional insult to the body from all the chemicals that were being exposed. And they do mention things like pesticides and food additives and what have you. And then the second thing they say is that that the conventional cancer treatment of chemotherapy and radiation and so forth is, for the most part, largely been a failure. And number three, that the nutritional approach to healing cancer is the only rational, sensible, effective way to go. They knew all this in 1976, and of course they've totally trashed the that route and went along the pharmaceutical way. And there are people right now that have obtained that report and are in the process of setting up a major suit against the NCI and perhaps the other powers that be.
Can you get me a copy of it?
I may be able to.
Would you please, or you know, can we get it to borrow it and we'll make a copy and get it back to you? Okay?
That
this is
good.
The sort of thing that we need, and of course we're going to get the government report on aspartame, get that out, make that available, because the only way, Tom, we're going to get people out of their apathy is to understand that their lives and the lives of their loved ones are at stake. And so much of this is unnecessary, and it is because there are wicked and evil and Luciferian forces out there, and they're working right at the upper echelons of our government. And where is the outcry? And that's what we've got to do, is create that outcry. And maybe suddenly we can get an army of people all across America who say, we're not going to take it anymore.
There's, I agree. There's certain spas in Germany, health retreats, where when the establishment, the CFR folks and so forth, get cancer, where they go for their cures. And they, the powers that be, they know what causes it and what cures it.
Well, now, can you really document that? I mean, how can we document that? I mean, it sounds good. It sounds logical. People say to me, well, these are not going to risk their lives or the lives of their families. How can you document that?
Okay, I'll see if I can bring you some information on that.
Okay, fine. I'm going to pin you down on it. But if it's true, we want to get it out, because now you're part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and of course, you can help provide us the information that we can put out, not only across America, but around the world.
Sounds good.
God love you. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thank
okay,
you.
Fine. Okay, fine. Our telephone number here, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And right now we have Tom on the line. Hi, Tom.
Right. Tom number two.
Okay, Tom number two.
Anyway, this is a great subject, and you were talking about all the different ways to suppress cures, because I've heard of a number of them, too. Have you ever heard of Johanna Brandt and the grape cure?
No, I really haven't.
She was a lady in South Africa, and she read a lot about medieval period, about how the monks would take the sick people out to the vineyards in France, and when they would harvest the grapes, the sick people were allowed to eat all the grapes, and they'd just gorge themselves on grapes for weeks on end, and they would cure cancer and a lot of other diseases.
I don't know anything about that. I'm sticking to the things I do, but if you have any information on that, we'd love to get that, and we really need to get this information available now. We do have the book, A World Without Cancer, Ed Griffin's very excellent book,
well,
the background of Laetrile, and we will have many of these other things available. But what we don't want you just to find out about it for yourself. We want you to help get this information out to suffering people across America, and then ask yourself, who would be wicked enough to suppress information? And we've got to stick with things that are scientific, that we can prove, because I know that there's a lot of disinformation out there that they're putting out just so that, you know, we'll be discredited in the other things that we say.
I'd like to put a different spin on it, though. See, the medical mind is trained to look at specifics, and I'm talking about it from a different point of view, from a generalist point of view. From a generalist point of view, the way God created us in nature, there are many ways of curing the body. It's not just specific cures. For example, you had Mr. Gerson, Dr. Max Gerson, the cancer cure that he used was raw carrot juice. And he was a personal friend of Albert Schweitzer, and he wrote a number of books about how he was curing people using raw fresh squeezed carrot juice and coffee enemas and other things like that. They stamped down on him, ran him down to Mexico, and to this day I've met his daughter. She has a clinic down near Tijuana.
And well, why don't you get hold of her for me? Of course, much of this is what Dr. Lorraine Day is saying in her very excellent film, You Can't Improve on God. And for those of you who are interested, we could put you in touch with Dr. Day. And she had an inoperable breast carcinoma, and it invaded, according to Lorraine, her chest wall. I know people who were with her when she was at the worst part of her cancer, and she wasn't about to have conventional therapy, and she is just as beautiful now as she ever was, just as sharp and completely cured, using entirely, once she'd had the original biopsy and the original surgery, she would not take a radical cancer treatment. She actually used the carrot juice and all of these other nutritional supplements. and she has beat the cancer. That is an amazing, amazing story. Now, but the trouble is, you got to get to it before it's too late. You get somebody like Michael Landon, you know, he's got inoperable cancer. He's taken all of these horrible things, probably chemotherapy and radiation, and then he goes on to the carrot juice, and by that time he's so destroyed his immune system, there's no way he's going to be benefited by nutritional therapy.
You know, another good one was she's not a medical doctor, she had a PhD, but it was Dr. Ann Wigmore at Hippocrates Health Institute, and she was curing people using a raw food diet and wheatgrass juice. And there's actually Hippocrates Health Institute scattered around in different places in the United States. Another one that's really good is George Ozawa, the macrobiotic diet. There's been a lot of people who've cured themselves of that. That's basically a rice-based, vegetable-based diet. But the reason why I mention this is that there's a group in Southern California, the Cancer Control Society. They have their big conventions in Pasadena, Labor Day weekend, every year for 20, 30 years. I've been to them before. And it's a whole hall filled with MDs, PhDs, osteopaths, chiropractors, and every type of person you can imagine. And they all have these different points of view on cancer. And when you start talking to all these people, you see there's a lot of people who cured themselves by a great number of different ways. It's really amazing. There's a lot of cures.
Trouble is, yeah, but there, of course, a lot of people would take these things, and the ones that aren't there are the ones who've died. So we've got to at least have an intelligent approach. In other words, we need to make sure we really have a cancer. It has to be, there are certain cancers that really, with the Hodgkin's disease, lymphomas, these really do well with chemotherapy and radiation. It's simply something like an inoperable lung cancer. If you use the radiation and chemotherapy, you're going to prolong their life a little bit, but you're not going to cure them because, I mean, these are 99% fatal, a lot of them, if they're inoperable. And these are the people who, before you get too far into this, should be tried on some of these alternative treatments, but they ought to be under the care of a good, competent doctor. And, of course, I'm suggesting Dr. Brzezinski's clinic because he certainly is operating under medical guidelines scientifically. And yet he's had some amazing, amazing cures. I mean, these are all inoperable cases he's getting, and he's getting a very good success rate. And the amazing thing is there are those wicked and evil people in the government who've done everything they could close him down. And for our listeners out there, if you didn't hear our interview with Dr. Brzezinski, it's included in that four-tape set called Genocide, along with my interview with Dr. Dinigan, my interview with him on MTBE, and then just sort of a general overview of the fact that there is an organized effort to block the implementation of effective cancer treatments that can save human lives, and yet these are effectively being blocked across America. That's what's so unconscionable. But you're right, Tom, there are lots of ideas out there. We simply need to have people, medically trained doctors, who understand these things and are willing to perhaps raise the hackles of their other doctors and say, look, what you're doing is not working. What I'm doing is working. Why not at least allow some of these alternative treatments to be tried, especially when they don't cost anything, especially when they're given away? Why don't you want these things given away? And, of course, the answer would be there is another agenda.
Right, that's the bottom line. Is there this another tentacle of the world population control thing? There's that MD, what is it, Sam Chachakwa, is that his name? He's an MD, and he's using cancer, the blood of people, to create viruses, to create an antiviral injection. They inject back in people, and apparently he's having good success with it. Going back to what Dr. Tom Clooney said a few minutes ago about the Rife microscope, there was another man back in that period, George Lazowski, I think his name was, and he created a machine that was somewhat similar to a transmitter, and it would transmit on different frequencies, and he had these charts, and he would come up with transmitter frequencies where he'd transmit and break viruses up. I mean, it's amazing how many ways people have found to cure or fix this thing. And I tell you the truth, I haven't seen any evidence that radiation or chemotherapy does that much good.
Well, Tom, that's because you're not a doctor, and I am a doctor, and there are certain people, it is certainly the treatment of choice. There are certain things where it's only palliative. And when it's only palliative, in other words, well, maybe it'll make you feel better and give you a few more months to live, then why not try these other things? I don't think that we should abandon conventional medicine, because conventional medicine has done a great deal of good, but we need to have these moderators, and maybe people like me. I'm not practicing medicine. I have nothing to gain one way or the other. But at least I have enough knowledge to know that if you have a lymphoma, you have a leukemia, something of that sort, and then the chemotherapy and the other things are the way to go. But if you have, imagine an operable pancreatic cancer that's metastasized, forget it. Try these other things, because some of these treatments have been dramatic, and certainly with an operable lung cancer, diffusely metastasized breast carcinoma, these are the things, that really, why not give them the ECAC? Why not give them Brzezinski's treatment if it's applicable? Why are you trying to block it? And that's the question we have to ask. And, of course, they say, well, it's not the way it's ordinarily done. Well, what's wrong? Shouldn't people have a right to do something on their own, especially when we know it will make them feel better? And, of course, that was the thing that Dr. Dean Burke, chief of investigation of the National Cancer Institute, for 25 years told me. They all feel better. And I've had this from people who've taken the treatments, whether they've recovered or not. They feel better. And I'll tell you, I've seen an awful lot of people who've gone through the chemotherapy and the radiation, and they're nauseated, and their hair falls out, and they feel terrible, and it wipes them out for weeks at a time. In fact, Craig Robertson, I don't know if you've heard any of my interviews with Craig, but Craig had a tumor of a polyp of his colon, and apparently it had invaded one of the local blood vessels, and the surgeon said, I got it all, and the oncologist said, you need a 5-fluorouracil, and you need it every 2 weeks for 6 months, or every month for 6 months. And I said to him, if the doctor thinks, who did the surgery, thinks he've got it all, maybe you ought to just think about some of these alternatives. And Craig said, oh, no, I'm going to go along with my oncologist. He did. He almost died. I mean, he knocked down his white count so much he began to bleed internally.
Is he still alive?
Oh, yeah, he is. In fact, he's going to be our guest in a couple of weeks. But believe me, he's doing a lot of these other things now. And he finally went to the oncologist and said, I've had 4 treatments. I'm not taking any more. And the oncologist said, oh, we ought to give you more. And I'm sure the oncologist is very sincere. What's wrong with these other treatments when the surgeon thinks he's got the whole thing? Because so much of what this does is simply to suppress your immunity, and you need your immunity to fight that cancer.
Well, if it is possibly true, and you and I both suspect this is the case, if it's possibly true that these organic treatments are being suppressed because of a world population control plan, it's also equally possibly true that chemotherapy and radiation and many pharmaceuticals are intentionally being used to kill people, and they're lying about the statistics of their success.
Well, but Tom,
they
some
lie.
Of them, they're
misleading people.
Tom, the people that I know who are treating cancer here are honestly doing their best, and I mean you can surmise that, but you can't just take a brush and say they're all lying. Some of it
no,
may
I'm
be lies, but some
MDs
of it, some
lying.
Of it, some of it,
I'm
you know,
where but, they get their information
but
from.
There
is
are
planted.
But there are enough people.
Like JAMA.
There, well, I. Well,
they're lying. The JAMA,
but,
JAMA,
no,
the pharmaceutical
not, it's,
company.
It's not all lies. See, the thing is, you've got to approach these things very logically.
That I agree.
Yes, some of the times,
right.
They will use medicine to distort science. In other words, science becomes political, science becomes economic, and of course they will purchase a result that they want. They will. If you are a scientist and you need money to do a study, and of course you have to do your study so you can publish, and if you don't publish, you perish. And you come up with reports that they don't like, then you're never going to get another grant again. So I'm afraid that some of these studies are slandered. But we know that medicine has really helped a lot of people, but it is simply, when you're dealing with inoperable cancers, why bother? I mean, why bother to irradiate when you're not going to save their life? Why not try these other things before their immune system is so badly damaged? Because we know that in generations past, many of these people recovered with these types of treatment that you're talking about.
All I'm trying to say is we need a lot of real cool-headed and cold-blooded professionals to look at each one of these pharmaceuticals in each one of these treatments, one by one, with the knowledge that you and I have, that some of them might be used to intentionally poison people and try to separate the good ones from the bad ones.
Nobody will disagree with you there at all. What we need, Tom, are honest people with the backing and the financial backing and an honest government that has not already been bought and purchased by the great pharmaceutical companies which interlock with the international establishment.
I'll tell you a great thing about Hoxie. On Hoxie, he had two different treatments. One was the herbal treatment, which you take internally, and the other was the external treatment. Now, the external treatment is very interesting, and most people don't even think to mention it. But he had this number of cases where, like, he did this spectacular demonstration where he had this man who had a tumor that covered almost his whole head. It was this huge tumor. And he would put the salve on it, and then in front of this huge crowd of people, like thousands of people, he pulled the tumor off this person, right? This had been going on for weeks while I was doing the cure, but sort of as this dramatic thing, he showed everyone that the tumor had actually broken away from the man's head. And what it was an old Indian cure called bloodroot, and it's very acidic, and it basically eats the tumor off right from the skin. And I've seen photographs and talked to other people who've used it who weren't even connected with Hoxie, and I guess it's just part of the old herbal treatments that have been around for hundreds of years.
Well, there's some of these things that really have dramatic effect. In fact, that's what the ECAC was an old Indian remedy. But you see, we're not allowed to do that. They would not license ECAC, even if you could find that it was beneficial. Why? Because there's no profit in it. Because you can't make any money out of an herbal remedy, and you're going to cost $1 million to be able to get the thing through the FDA, and then of course the FDA probably would not give you any exclusive rights on it, or might not even authorize it, because unfortunately the FDA in many instances is bought and paid for too. Well, in fact, we've got some of the best government bureaucrats in Washington D.C. today that money will buy.
Well, it's pretty amazing. Well, God's love conquers all. I'm sure just talking to people about it is a great way to get the ball rolling.
Well, I hope that some of our listeners out there will want to get the information, get the books, find out about the NutraSweet that your kids are drinking or maybe that you're drinking, and what it does as far as the mind, as far as the degenerative neurological diseases, as far as its carcinogenic effect. Get the facts and find out. Look at the scientific studies. And, of course, we're collecting all the scientific studies on fluoride. We've got a lot. And there's no question at all that it's being used for fertility control. There's no question it causes increased hip fractures. There's no question that, you know, this softens bone in people. The scientific studies out of China show it decreases IQ. So why are they using it in America? Well, if you wanted to destroy our people, you could not do a better job than we're doing. Tom, it's so good to hear from you.
You know, one last thing is this is a good plug for the local organic growers. And if people would patronize our local organic growers, people buy a lot of stuff in Safeway. And there's just, not just Safeway, all these big stores. There's rows and rows and rows and rows of bottles and jars and cans. They're all filled with preservatives. And if people would go back to eating the way their parents, or I should say grandparents, did, go to the local organic health food stores and buy the fresh fruits and vegetables and make things from scratch. Not only does it help our local farmers, it could save your life.
Okay, thanks so much,
anyway,
Tom.
God bless.
Okay, fine. And this is Dr. Stan. It's been an interesting program, and I appreciate so much your listening. If you have any question or comment, don't hesitate to drop us a note. If you'd like to get some of the documentation we've been talking about, we're accumulating it. We carry the books we've talked about, the tape sets. Pray for our nation. Pray for our leaders. Pray for revival, and pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection.
This is KFERFM 89.9 Santa Cruz. Serving Santa Cruz and the beautiful central coast of California with beautiful music and easy listening. For your listening pleasure, stay tuned to KFER.